Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine. I am Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, and excellent list maker, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hello.
Hey, Jason, how are you?
I'm good. Making a list, checking it twice. Christmas is done, but you're still, you know, you just made your list too. Santa Claus is nothing on TV critics who have to do end of year lists.
That we don't miss them. Yeah.
You got to make some lists. Yeah, imagine if you're still doing the power rankings. That would be like list making every week. But
well,
alas.
That did come up actually at the TV Talk Machine party.
It did. It did. You were non-committal. Because it sounds like a lot of work.
I can't hear you.
Nope. Is this thing on? No, I don't know. So we're in the shadow of the new year. We're closing out 2016. And so we should close out our coverage of your various lists that you made. We've got some lists that you and Dan Feinberg collaborated on that we'll talk about your picks in these lists, too. And then I've got a few letters to read. And then we'll be done for the year. And who knows what comes in 2017.
I know it comes to 2017, a whole hell of a lot of more TV shows.
Yeah, did you see, I saw the FX Network's official 2016 scripted TV series chart was updated. And what it showed is that the total number of TV series increased yet again. But the only specific area of TV that grew was streaming, which doubled the number of originals on streaming. All of the other categories had fewer shows than they did last year.
Mm-hmm. So there would have been we would have peaked in peak TV were it not for streaming.
For the massive acceleration happening on streaming channels.
Right. And it does make sense because outside of Hulu, the other two seem to, you know, Amazon and Netflix seem to have an inordinate amount of free money to spend. So,
yeah. So I wonder if that will mean that we'll look back on this and think that this is sort of like peak TV now, or if what this is some sort of transition to just sort of streaming completely exploding and you know, so many more being on streaming instead of the other outlets.
And it's certainly possible because I will say, but who knows? There's no sign of anything abating because Alan Sepinwall late last night sent a tweet out that was like, he had counted up just shows for the beginning of available screening episodes for critics to watch for just the beginning of 2017. And there was 154 episodes available for us to watch. Something like that. Or maybe more. And it was the number kept rising. It was an ungodly amount. It was a scary email. I wanted to say, what kind of monster tweets that out? You know, a couple of days before the
holiday.
You'll
scare the children.
Let us just get through this one.
But anyway, so the numbers are 455 estimated by FX Networks Research for this year, up from 421 last year. That's a number that has increased every year since at least 2009. To put it in perspective, in 2002, there were 182 original scripted series. This year, there are 455. However, broadcast was down from 150 to 145. Pay cable from 37 to 36, basic cable down from 188 to 181. However, online services went from 46 originals last year, 2015, to 93 this year in 2016. And thus, the number continues to rise.
Yeah, if it's even too early to say that, maybe next year, were you to take out streaming, we would see more of a decline. You never know. I mean, just be they're back at it, and they got another, everybody's up five each, so who knows?
Pretty wild, though. So I'll put a link to the story in the show notes that's got that chart in it. John Landgraf's gophers are working on that. How about we talk about best TV performances? How about that?
I like that category. That's a favorite with me.
All right. So now you and Dan did this, your colleague Dan Feinberg at The Hollywood Reporter. But Dan can't speak for himself here. So we're just going to talk about your choices on this list because it wasn't a draft, although I'm sure that there are some of Dan's picks that you would probably approve of, like Pamela Adlon in Better Things.
Yes.
We've talked about that.
Yeah.
But you picked Alan Alda from Horace and Pete, which we talked about a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, he's amazing. That's a, you know, as I said in there, it's not like a fun show to watch, but
no,
it's dark and nasty. Alan Alda's performance is amazing, and he just completely inhabited Uncle Pete, and he's just such a terrible person, but he did a really great job on it. And I kept looking at his, like I said, it was just, you know, his eyes were amazing because he was just, I don't know, there was something about it. If you haven't watched it, I think everybody should kind of watch it anyway. Well, everybody who likes, you know, dour and bleak cables type fare, do that. But Alan Alda's performance is amazing. So really, really stuck out for me.
Let's see. What about Wyatt Cenac in People of Earth?
And on this list, just to know, I mean, I think I loved everything that Dan picked too.
Oh, right. Well,
on most of those.
Louis Anderson in Baskets.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And Sterling K. Brown.
Sterling K. Brown in People versus O.J. Simpson. Yeah.
But Wyatt Cenac was, he's in People of Earth. Again, we talked about this the other week. That is just a fun little series. I'm happy it was done. But he rooted the whole thing for me because I loved the fact that he was kind of just really this like low-key, lo-fi dude who goes from New York up to do this investigation on this group of surviving alien abductors. So you need his kind of calm demeanor in their awkward weirdness. But he also has his own ability to freak out, and when he freaks out, it's great. And he also has that low level of comedy where he's able to be funny just as he's kind of talking to you in an everyday normal tone, and then you're like, oh, I'm laughing at that, but it's not pitched like punchline, you know, set up punchline. He's just funny in every word he kind of uses. So very, very excellent performance.
You want to say anything about Rectify? That's Clayne Crawford.
Oh, Clayne Crawford and Rectify. Again, we Dan and I, you know, we talk about which ones we're going to do. We all have favorites, and they cross over, but there's ones that you kind of want to talk about. And so, yeah, I mean, I like that he picked Clayne Crawford because it's just, he's just, and I took that tact in other shows too, where you just, the other one, everybody else gets so much attention, it's, you need to spread it around a little bit. And he's really great, and he really stood out as Teddy from the very beginning. And sometimes people forget that, like, oh, I hate that guy. Like, when people say that, that's because a really good actor is making you hate them for the most part. And so it takes talent to do that. So I like that.
So I was surprised. I'm many seasons behind you on this, but I think this is interesting where we get so focused on Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys. But you picked Noah Emmerich from The Americans.
Yeah, and I think that is, it's funny because that immediate reaction I got was people understanding that, like I said, oh, I see what you're doing. You're just basically saying, okay, Kerry Russell and Matthew Rhys were nominated for Emmys finally, and it's easy just to say good job and pick someone else. And they're like, why didn't you pick Martha? It's funny because that happened at 92nd Street Y as well. But, you know, Noah Emmerich's performance is, it's essential to that story. And, you know, because he's likely to be the one who brings these guys down, and he's a good neighbor. And rather than just, you know, when you watch the pilot to this episode, he could have just been in the hands of worse writers. He could have just been like, okay, he's the FBI agent who lives across the street from the Russian spies. And it's, let's every episode, like, you get so close. No, they didn't go that route. They made him have a fully fledged life of ups and downs and bad decisions and interesting stuff. So I like him. And he deserves to progress as he did in season 4.
Next up, what can you say? Donald Glover in Atlanta.
Yeah, pretty much all out genius. And I, you know, we tried to take, we tried to talk about in these lists, you can't have, you know, they don't want us to have 100 of them like what I kind of I do in my shows, because there's just so many lists. So it's really hard to leave people out. And I what I was trying to do was, I think that Brian Tyree Henry and Keith Stansfield, and even Zazie Beetz is really good at what she does. But the two other guys who work around Donald Glover in this are excellently cast. And it's really hard to not include them, because they're like soundboard. All three of them play off each other. It's like a jazz thing, even though it's a hip hop show. But like, it's just you needed those two guys in there. They're excellent actors in their own right. But yeah, Donald Glover. Oh my God, this was his like Pamela Adlon. This is like the stepping out. This is the coming out year for Donald Glover.
Yeah. Eva Green in Penny Dreadful. How about that?
Yes, she probably should have been. I mean, I've singled her out before. I think she probably was deserving of at least some kind of awards recognition for the first two seasons. And Penny Dreadful went 3, and I won't say anything beyond that for people who want to watch it. But she is fearless. You have to watch the show to see her acting, and you're like, okay. I sometimes do that when I'm watching a show. I'm like, could you be? I could never be an actor. I just don't know how to do. I could never, you know. It's a level of like free falling and not being self aware. And I'm constantly self aware. I couldn't escape. She does stuff on this show that's just amazing. It's like thrashing around and being possessed and then she's haunted, and then she's sexy, and then she's scary, and she's driven. She's all over the map. But like when she goes into the dark, dark places, man, it takes a pretty good actress to pull that off and make it look believable. So,
yeah. I'm going to mention Dan Feinberg promoted Jared Harris in The Crown. I love Jared Harris in everything he's in. I just wanted to say that. He is good. So great. And I haven't seen The Crown, but I'll take it at his word that he was great in that, because he certainly was great in a whole bunch of other things I've seen him in, including The Expanse this year, with speaking with a crazy accent, because he speaks the like asteroid belt patois, and you almost can't understand what he's saying, but I liked the charisma of that guy. It was great. So the very wow. different part from King yeah. George VI in The Crown, yeah. but still.
And I have The Crown on my list to watch. To have not.
Yeah, I've got that. I've got that on my list now, because I've seen a bunch of people talk about how good that show was. So who knew? I'm gonna do a disclaimer here, Tim. Happy Valley, not actually happy, but Sarah Lancashire, you said you have to try and restrain yourself from talking too much about how much you love her. But here we are. You were prompted by your employers to make a list including her. So how could you leave her off?
Yeah. And, you know, I did think a lot about that, because we have a little blurbs to do it. I like that she seems to be fighting against herself, and she's everything that you... I don't know. It's hard to talk about her performance without somehow making a cliche out of it because of what you say, because she's so good in it. And, you know, I love the fact that she's so tough, but has this other side of her where she just in little windows opens it up. And you just thought, this character is a woman who's just... can't allow that those little windows to open too far, because she'll just collapse. She's sexy as hell without ever being, she's in the most clunkiest cop suit ever, and that woman is, I don't, she's a woman of a certain age who's sexy as all get out. That woman, like, she's my everything. And I also think she's really funny, and she's tough, and she gets to the point. Great actress. I'm thinking that this is that there won't be a season 3. Even though they announced that there would be, because I don't think she's going to do it. So I don't think there's going to be one. So my fawning over her ends there.
Hey, Hugh Laurie was in a bunch of good shows this year, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, like, what a year. Oh, my God. Like,
you picked The Night Manager, where he is a scary arms dealer, but he was also in Veep and on Chance, starred mm-hmm. in Chance. So good year for Hugh Laurie.
Yeah, good and great in all those roles, right? And I'm so happy that he's in Chance. But in The Night Manager, I mean, the thing that you have to remember is that, you know, it's that Hugh Laurie is one of the funniest British comedians ever.
Yeah.
And he's an amazing dramatic actor. And like we were talking about Andre Brower. The fact that Hugh Laurie scared the hell out of me in The Night Manager, that... took some doing. I gotta tell you, that took some doing. He is ominous, and you just got the feeling that, because it's all, you know, Tom Hiddleston, it's a spy versus yeah. spy technically a thing, and you're just trying not to get caught. There's all this, it has flaws in it, but the one thing you never ever feel like in this show is that you're gonna get one over on Hugh Laurie's character. It's really scary. I would have cracked like 10,000 times. I would have like, okay, I know I shouldn't be here. I'm trying to get you. I would have cowered. He's very good.
John Turturro in The Night Of.
Yeah, right? I mean, we look at that and say, John Turturro, look at that IMDb. I mean, that's a pretty good list of stuff he's been on, plus movies. Great actor. But what I liked about this was, like, I liked that it was like a low rent lawyer who got a little bit lucky and was in a little bit over his head. And of course you can't underestimate what it must have been like, you know, having to sort of like have eczema as this terrible case of foot eczema and other and beyond be a metaphor for everything, but also just physically so incredibly awful to portray. Like, I mean, everybody talked about that. You can't watch this show without like wincing when you see this man's feet covered in eczema. So it's something. And you could probably argue that he could have let that become the thing that the acting, but no, he was good in everything. Like, there's a cat in the show and there's his conscience. There's so many good parts to this that I love. So it's a really standout performance.
All right, I know you love Fleabag, so of course you've got Phoebe Waller-Bridge on your list here.
Yeah, the very obvious thing here is breaking the fourth wall is really hard to do. You shouldn't really do it. It's been done, and it's been done and poorly. The whole series is set up on that, and you have to have this magnetic personality that she has. She is really unique looking. She can mug with the best of them without it being like, ugh, she's mugging again. It's funny. She does all this stuff. But again, to me, that's just all like an underhand softball way of setting up how she acts later and sort of destroys your soul and you feel so sad and crushed. The mugging and the big eyes and the kind of like winking stuff is so much fun until things go really badly for her. And you can see what she's hiding underneath. And she's an incredible actress to pull it all out.
And then your last entry on the list is you cheated a little bit because you have three standout performances in Westworld. But hey, I'm okay with it because I think that was a solid show. And these are great picks. Evan Rachel Wood, Thandie Newton, and Jeffrey Wright.
Right. And, you know, I remember when I was watching it, like when you first start watching Westworld, I was like, oh, Evan Rachel Wood's going to be like that. She's a pick immediately. The first couple of episodes, you're like, oh, she's going to be an immediate pick for an actress because of what she has to be robotic. She has to be lifelike.
Right.
She has to be acting one way. And they say, okay, now shut down. And her body has to sag and nuance that it all being naked at the same time, by the way. In ways that I think would be really difficult for an actor or an actress to do. She pulled it off. But then as the show goes on, Thandie Newton's character really takes off, more so than she does in the first couple of episodes. And she, in fact, becomes a significant player in there. And then Jeffrey Wright, who's great in the whole thing, there's a subtle element to him at the beginning. And then he's just he's the central core to the whole show. You couldn't leave anybody out. And all of them were asked to do different things in ways that, not being an actor, but seeing so many countless acting performances, you don't see actors called upon so many times to make these kind of character shifts within shifts. And then as the story changes, it's like, okay, now we're going to take it one little nuanced or a little, we're going to change the color, shade the color a little bit, in this next performance. And all three of them did that all the time. I was completely impressed beginning to end with all of them. So I didn't want to separate them.
I agree. Some really amazing performances in there. And we did even mention that, you know, this is a show that also has Anthony Hopkins and Ed Harris in it.
Yeah, right.
By the way, unbelievable. They're also around. Ooh. You want to quickly blow through the best episodes? This is a weird list. Do they make you watch this or write this list? They force you?
You know, it's TV episodes is my least favorite one.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that to to Dan, but we had done it last year, and I think I had the same argument last year. I don't have, conceptually, I don't remember episodes unless they're terrible or they're the best episode of that whole season.
Right.
But I also don't think it's fair to pull single episodes out. So I'm not on board with it, but I had to be on board with it. So yeah, I have picks.
So if you if you had we don't have to go through them all, but like if you had one that you wanted to call out, what would it be?
Well, let's see here. I'll do two.
Okay.
Because I think the episode of Atlanta, BAN, Black American Network, that episode was so completely different than anything else, and it was so super creative with its commercials. It was basically Donald Glover saying to FX, "Are you when you said I could do anything, is this kind of what you meant?" it also was that episode was an outlier, but it also in some ways, but it also marked like just how thinking outside of the box he was when he was making that show. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, I think that would probably be the one for me that stood out, and for episode wise because it was different, but it showed what the creator's capacity was. And the other pick I would say, because you're a fan of the show too, I had to have the season finale of Game of Thrones in there, because I felt like season six was maybe the best episode out there. We could argue that, but for me, I loved that sense of it. The whole season seemed to be moving more free. You and I have talked about this.
Yeah.
But the finale I felt was like, it was to me, the finale was a little bit like a bunch of actors or characters, pressing against the gigantic chain link fence, and the chain link fence goes down and they all go running.
Yeah.
And that's what it felt like in that last episode. And as a fan of the show rather than just a critic, and I know you're a big fan of the show too, it was so good for each of these mini individual characters to see, have like either their, you know, give somebody their comeuppance or get some revenge. It felt good as a fan.
Yeah, for sure. It was like that, the whole show is like on the everybody's on the train now, and the train is accelerating rapidly.
So. Right. That was that one's kind of easy to pick, but that was hard to leave that one out. I mean, you couldn't do that.
Yeah, I agree. Hey, before we're done for the year, I figure we'd end, we'll end with some letters, but before then, let's end on a negative note with a fun list, which is the worst. And this is not scientific. You alphabetized it. We are peak TV, which means we probably are, you know, there are a lot of misfires out there as part of peak TV. But, this, you know, you got to let some of your grudges out and get them out of your system before the end of the year with this list.
Yeah. And for my picks, it was kind of funny, cause I wrote the intro to this one too. And
I could tell the Tim Goodman stylings here. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like, I said, the only thing you need to know about this list is that it could be 100 times longer, or probably longer.
Yeah.
And cause it really could have, we could have gone on and on and on about shows. So to me, it's like, I don't get that much joy in picking on really bad shows like American Housewife and Conviction, which both made my list.
Yeah.
I did get a little joy, of course, picking on Pure Genius.
Yes, because I noticed that. That was great. Not a thing.
Because you had to do
made
that.
An appearance there, yep.
Right. And I got I had fun at poking at like a show like, because, you know, I in particular, but we as critics say, you know, cable series and streaming series, they've just, the bar is higher and they do a lot of great work. And a lot of times we're doing like, oh my God, these unsung shows that you haven't seen. Well, you know what? Every now and then they do it like a total piece of crap. And then they try to get rid of it as quickly as they can. It's the biggest embarrassment you can do. And AMC and Feed the Beast, which if I would just say, if you were to go back and see my tweets at Press Tour when they presented this show, and came out to talk about it without a presentation reel, without an actor, without an actually finished script or maybe even a premise. I was like, "What? Why are you talking about this show that we're not going to see?" And oh my God, they put a picture up, and I'm like, "That's a terrible picture of a restaurant." Or if that's your show logo, I wouldn't watch it. I think this show was dead from the moment they came out at Press Tour to even say that they were going to create it. It was terrible. But I think I saved most of my venom. When you say you know, let's end on a negative note. Is the disappointment in two shows, Vinyl and Roadies, yeah, that I really want, because I'm such a big music fan. I wanted both of those to be good. And I think Vinyl could have been good, and I think ended up being the bigger failure because multi-million dollars put into it. I mean, like $110 million.
Yep.
Yeah, big name, huge pedigree, amazing performances. Everything was there for them to do well. The material was right in front of them. Bobby Cannavale was great at the beginning. If you didn't have him be this coke-snorting idiot the entire season and you kept it to two or three or four episodes, maybe that would have been an Emmy-worthy performance, but keeping him doing that, you just couldn't fix it. But, you know, and so I think that is the biggest, like, the epic failure of, for me, 2016. That is the poster series for failing on television in 2016.
Yeah.
But Roadies was the disappointment.
Cameron Crowe will save us, right? He will be able to, if anyone could make a rock and roll TV show, it's Cameron Crowe, right? Answer to a dream of like, yeah, what if Cameron Crowe did a TV show about rock and roll? Oh, that would be great.
Mm-hmm. And what if it was on Showtime?
Sure.
Where there would be no commercials. And
amazing.
It's, it's so amazing. Unlimited creative freedom.
Yeah.
wow.
And
how disappointing. And it wasn't even like, oh, I wish this show was better because I wanted it to be better because it's Cameron Crowe. This show was absolute crap. And it was so unbelievable how big of a swing and miss this show was. It's like, did Cameron Crowe make this show? What happened?
Yeah, I want to throw a shout out to Dan Feinberg because he covered a lot of really important ground in this list. DC's Legends of Tomorrow, which everybody will say that apparently season two is better than season one. Well, how could it be worse is my comment. that show was a complete disaster that squandered all the goodwill that I was willing to give it based on The Flash and Arrow. And, you know, the fact that they spent like the first quarter of each of those shows' seasons laboriously setting up this ridiculous premise kind of got the other shows off kilter, too. Boy, what a mess that was. Fuller House, I watched an episode of Fuller House just to see, and it was garbage. I mean, it was just garbage. It was terrible. Mm-hmm. The X-Files. Oh, the X-Files. Dan was judicious because he said sort of like the ones in the middle were okay. And he's right. Mm-hmm. They were okay. They weren't great, honestly, but compared to the ones that Chris Carter wrote that were the ones on the beginning and the end, which were embarrassingly bad. So it's, you know, it wasn't the actors. It was the writing. The writing really let them down. So, that was a super huge disappointment for me as a big X-Files fan from the olden times. That was, it was not good.
Well, you'll enjoy that we had like a little like, because he's like, well, you know, if you put Vinyl and Roadies together, that gives you one more slot.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, does that mean I get X-Files? He's like, oh, I could take X-Files. I think we both kind of wanted to take a club
out. You got
to
take a swing at that one.
Yeah.
That was, yeah. What you gonna do? Well, okay, so
what are you gonna do?
There it is. We ended the year on a negative note. Want to do some letters before we go? Clear out the letter pile?
Sure, let's do that.
All right, just some really quick ones. Happy holidays, Tim and Jason, and happy new year to you. This is John in the 925. Thanks for another year of entertaining and informative podcasting. Just read Tim and Dan's worst of list for the Hollywood Reporter. I think Tim's most redeeming quality may be that he doesn't really enjoy doing them, nor should he. You either end up offending the creators of shows nobody cares about or fanboys who care too much. I hope to listen to TVTM later today. Not sure if I'll have enough time, though. Only 8 more days until Netflix drops The Rockford Files. Yeah, you gotta binge that one. Not a thing. If someone on the street flashes a badge, you don't have to stop and let them take your car. At least not where I live. Good. A classic not a thing. Classic TV cop not a thing. I need to commandeer your car. Thank you, John, in the 925.
Very good.
That was great. We have a follow-up from Hannah in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
She said, hi, fellas. I'm still in Sweden, although when I first started listening, I was in London. It's true, I had a baby, but that was 7 years ago. He now has a little brother, too. Anyway, glad you're still enjoying the mug. Jason wasn't on the knobs back then, so he didn't get a mug. Anyway, I was happy to hear the story of the origin of the Twitter accounts. Love to your mothers, and Merry Christmas from a snow-covered Stockholm. Very nice. Thank you, Hannah.
That is very nice. Thank you, Hannah. Congratulations on the second kid for you. That's great.
And we've got one from Alan, one of my nemeses in the 415. This is a question for you, Tim. Have you had any pleasant TV surprises this year? Shows that exceeded your expectations, even if they didn't earn a space in your best shows list? Pleasant surprise?
I think, well, there's been a couple. Fleabag, for sure,
right,
was one that was like, what? Yeah, okay, this is amazing. And I think Stranger Things exceeded my expectations because it shouldn't have worked. And I saw the flaws, and normally when I see the flaws, I'm like, ugh, I'm done. But I was like, oh, I see your flaws. Let's watch another one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're doing something right when that happens. Yeah. So I think those were definite pleasant surprises. Nice.
Okay, one last question for the year. This is from Paige in the 425. And this is the most following up on some of the most important stuff we talked about this year.
Okay.
Paige writes, I was curious after our previous discussion of why the snakes didn't attack the cameraman on Planet Earth 2. Okay. Turns out they were on an island where the animals didn't know to be afraid of people, so they actually filmed pretty close up. My guess is the snakes couldn't see the still cameraman. The original clip mentions their eyes are bad, so they mostly sense movement. Or they were uninterested in the huge cameraman when they knew they could take down the iguana hatchling. And she sent a link about it. So thank you, Paige, for answering a question, sort of an answer,
yeah,
but they're like on an island.
No,
they don't
good.
Know the people or what they are, and they're kind of dumb, and they can get that lizard. They can get that iguana and take it up. So, so Planet Earth, something to look forward to actually as we're ending, because that's going to air in the U.S. in 2017. So we will all, the U.S. will probably go snakes chasing an iguana crazy in the new year, and we will have already covered it. Like
we will have.
Down cold. Yeah.
Do you want a little bit of this? Do you want a little bit of... No, that's not the right thing.
The breaking news on our podcast news. That we recorded a week before. Yeah, sure.
Yes, breaking news. I have the entirety of Planet Earth sent to me.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you can watch...
Oh, yeah.
You can watch those snakes.
I'm going to watch those snakes, yeah. I'm going to freak out. I'm not able to sleep after that.
Yeah, that's okay. You can't sleep anyway, right? So it's fine.
If there's a drop bear in that, just going to be really bad.
No drop bears. No.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel like we've reached the end of TV Talk Machine for 2016. So we'll have to come back and do it again next year.
Wow. Look.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Pat ourselves on the back.
Good job.
Give ourselves
Jason.
A clap.
Excellent. Excellent work. Thank you for reminding me each and every week.
So I'm happy to do it. So next week, I'm going to be on vacation. So, with any luck, you and David Lore will get a chance in the new year to chat a little bit for a fill-in episode next week.
Yes.
You're not going anywhere. You're not going to the press tour or anything like that.
Going to the press tour, and we can't use a go to the bullpen reference because baseball season's over.
Yeah, he's coming off the bench.
He's coming off the bench.
So
get your helmet on, Lore.
So with any luck, next week you'll get guest host David Lohr talking to Tim. Until then, let me give you the numbers. It's podcast@tvtalkmachine.com to email us. You can post on Facebook, facebook.com/TV Talk Machine. And you can tweet at us @TVTM. Tim is Bastard Machine and I am Jay Snell. And until next year, Happy New Year, everybody, from all of us here at the TV Talk Machine. And Tim, Happy New Year to you too.
Happy New Year to you and see you next year.
See you next year, everybody.